It's Basketball Camp with Rick Camp.
Welcome into another edition of Basketball Camp. I am Rick Camp here with you as always. Thank you for tuning in. As always, I want you to remember, follow me on Twitter at Rick C. Camp and send your thoughts, questions, anything with the upcoming NBA bubble or the Chicago Bulls. We'll be doing a State of the Bulls address next week with everything that's going on before the bubble gets started. Don't want to completely ignore the Bulls as much as they'd probably like it to be that way. Send those inquiries, basketballcamp@gmail.com, and subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. I'm excited this week. A guy that I've respect his basketball opinion, been following him for quite a while. Excited to get him on the pod. Mo DeKeel, you follow him on Twitter at Mo_NBA. He spent 8 years as a video coordinator with the Clippers and Spurs. You read his work on Bleacher Report. You hear him on Nerder She Wrote, which is now the Friday edition of the Athletic NBA podcast. And also on Brody and the Beard with Kelly Eco. That's the Athletic's Houston Rockets podcast and the founder of thejumpball.net. Mo, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. That's a lot. Apparently, I'm busy.
Yeah, I know. Hey, it's a good thing in these times, man. And also, been keeping... So, in the NBA Twitter game, do you have the preeminent mustache at this point?
Oh, if that's the case, we got to work on that. Somebody's got to do better than what I got going. It is glorious, though. I am proud of the mustache. Took a lot of heat for it in the early stages of it growing, but it's coming to fruition kind of nicely.
So how much are you actually like trimming and trying to keep it respectable versus just letting it go full quarantine style?
I trim it a little bit. You know, when I start to trim it, there are two times where I'm like, okay, I need to trim it. One, when it's like getting to the point where it's annoying my lip, mm-hmm. right? And I could feel it kind of coming down there. And the other one, this one's going to be really kind of stupid. But when I run, I kind of just look down, I can see like a wayward stash hair going in one direction, and it just drives me insane. And I'm like, when I get home, man, I'm gonna trim you so bad. that's kind of the permanent of it. But I'm not going to like crazy details.
So I had never really, like, the most I'd done is a goatee at like any point in time. But once the quarantine started and I was just at home at all times, my wife was like, you should just let it go for a while. I'm like, you sure? Because that affects you too. And she's like, no, go for it. Because she's sadistic like that and whatever. So I let the thing go. What my breaking point was with the beard, when it curled up on the edges and started to touch my ear. That's when I'm like, yes, that is a huge problem. So that was when I'm like, you know what? At this point, I can risk it and go to the barber. So that was like the point.
That's the next level. Like, so now my hair has gone. I think my hair is crazier than my mustache. Mm-hmm. And I'm at the point now where I've actually just got clippers, because I'm not going to go to the barber. Like, I'm probably going to be one of the last people in quarantine. Let's just be honest here. I'm one of those. So I'm actually getting ready to probably trim my hair in the next few days, just because it's so annoying on my ears. And this has a chance, Rick, to be a full disaster. I might come out of this completely shaved head. And if I shave my head, I'm shaving the mustache. Like, it's just like it all goes.
That's fair. Well, because you guys are sheltering in place again, right? Out in LA-ish?
We are, I would say ish. Like, okay. I don't know how many people are really doing it. And, you know, it's not... probably not a good thing, but my barber has been giving haircuts throughout all of this.
Gotcha.
And I'm like, I'm gonna be waiting a while.
Yeah, no, I do not blame you. I'm in the Chicago area, so we've actually been one of the states that, knock on wood, has been doing it better than most to this point. So I actually felt safe enough to go out, and it's fun that we're doing this right now. As I look in front of me at the TV, there's actual scrimmages going on, which
right now, as we speak, the first scrimmage has started.
Right. Because, you know, as you expect, when you see the Clippers go on the floor, you're going to see Rodney Magruder and Joakim Noah out there. But this is how starved for basketball we are, that we're like, yes, this is like Joakim Noah's out there. Sure. Let's go. I don't care. It's basketball.
He's the only big man they got left right now. And that's there at the bubble currently.
So we might as well just like get right to it at this point. The first thing that I'm interested in with the whole bubble situation is something I know you guys have talked about a bit on Nerder, is what teams do you think are going to have more of an advantage? Is it the teams that have more continuity at least I was thinking Denver before we found out all the guys that either have COVID or just haven't made it there yet, but at least the theory of Denver or teams that are more, to take your guy Seth Partnow's term, heliocentric, like Houston or like Dallas.
I think it's a mix across the board. Here, the most important thing is finding your rhythm and your flow as quickly as possible. It's really, to me, the teams with the best chemistry, and everybody has a defined role. So it's not so much necessarily what system they're running, but having the understanding of this is what I'm supposed to do. If you're the Lakers, you know like what your role is on that team. Everybody on that team knows their role, knows where they're supposed to be, and so on. Now it's just about catching your rhythm, catching your flow. Same for Houston, you know, and they're still also at the same time still experimenting with a small ball lineup, and that's a whole other thing there, and they're still figuring that out as they go. So every team's going to have a different sort of thing. I didn't necessarily agree with Seth when he was saying like those teams are going to go, you know, quicker. I just think it's a matter of who's most comfortable and how quickly they can get that rhythm back. And my, you know, I didn't get a chance to go back at it, Seth, on that one, but I will hear, because he can't defend himself, and that's sure. Just the best way to do it. You know, my thing is like that might work in the first couple of games of this restart, but come playoffs, you know, it's the teams that can slip into their continuity that's really going to matter. And the teams that can kind of just continue with that flow, that's the teams that are going to have the most success in the playoffs, and I think in the bubble ultimately.
Well, we're looking at the Clippers right now as they started up, and like you mentioned, it's not a whole lot of their actual team that's out there at the moment, but they're a team that I find interesting because they've almost been playing, I don't know if it's chaotic isn't the right word, but kind of unstable a lot of the year with having Paul George and Kawhi come in. And then when you have the second unit and it's Montrez, assuming he comes back to the bubble, and Lou Williams, it's a whole different offense. So I almost wonder if a team like that, is it built more for a chaotic scenario? Because they kind of haven't had as much continuity the entire year, and they've been able to play as well as they have.
Well, I mean, they're in a great situation in the sense of, look, their two top guys are probably top 10 players in Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Like, they can overcome a lot of, they have a larger margin of error, you know, and they can overcome some of this chaos and stuff. And you're right. Like, you know, when you look at the numbers in the 60 something games they've played this year, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard only played 32 games together, you know, with the two of them on the court at the same time. And they've been having just injuries and guys, you know, in and out. Like, Doc just hasn't had his full lineup really the whole way through. So they're a team that it's going to be interesting trying to figure out where everybody fits. And now you add the wrinkles of, you know, Montrezl Harrell left the bubble, you know, Ivica Zubac hasn't been there yet, you know, and now you're depending on Joakim Noah, who I believe signed his 10-day like 20 minutes before, you know, almost yeah, like right before the shutdown. Like, I don't even know if he got a practice in before the team shut down, you know, and now he's starting. And granted, this is just a scrimmage and things like that. But look, those guys might, we don't know how long when those guys get there. First off, we don't know when those guys are going to get back. We don't know how long they're going to have to quarantine when they get back. You know, Joakim Noah could be starting games for them next week. And that's how quick of a turnaround we're at. You know, I think we're 8 days away from the start of the season. And I think that's the kind of stuff, you know, that's going to be challenging for the Clippers is figuring it out. But they've handled it pretty well all season, considering they're the second in the West. They're probably one of the top three teams expected to win the championship. And that just goes to the talents of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard.
So we might as well just kind of stay out West, and especially more on Houston, because we mentioned him already, and obviously you do Brody and the Beard with Kelly Eco. And I know a lot of people are saying they're the boom or bust team. Like, they're either going to flame out spectacularly in round one, or they're actually going to give maybe one of the LA teams a decent push. So do you lean one way or the other on that? And how much do you think they're actually going to care about the 8 seeding games and trying to get wherever their preferred destination is between 3 and 7?
I think they're going to care. I think the big, you know, they're in a battle there in terms of who are they going to play. You know, seeding now takes on a different role. Seeding doesn't matter as much in terms of home court. it matters more in the sense of who do you want to play? What bracket do you want to be in? Do you want to play the Lakers in the second round or do you want to play the Clippers in the second round? And every team's going to match up differently. I think for Houston, these games matter. On top of just the seeding and who they might match up with, you know, they're going to have to continue to figure out small ball. I mean, they went to it in late January, but they finally kind of settled their roster after the trade deadline when they got Robert Covington in. That's still not a lot of time to have a ton of chemistry. And even then you have a four-month layoff. You have James Harden showing up a little bit later to the bubble. You have Russell Westbrook, who's just today practicing for the first time with the team in the bubble. So I think, you know, they got some catching up to do. And these games matter because it's in terms of catching up and just getting back into game shape, getting ready for the playoffs and all that. And for them, it matters in the sense of, you know, who do they want to play potentially in this first round and who do they want to play potentially in the second round?
Yeah, because I'm just fascinated by it because currently they would play Denver. And I think that'd just be a fascinating series, even though it seems like, if I remember, Houston's kind of had Denver's number to this point, but I don't believe they have any of those games since the Capella trade. But still, that'd be fascinating. So is Eric Gordon the, I don't know, I hate the term X factor, but you know what I mean? Like the, if they're going to boom, obviously Harden and Westbrook have to be who they are at their peak. But is Eric Gordon that guy that has to be the third dude that just goes off to really propel them higher than a lot of people think they could go?
Yeah, I think, you know, Eric Gordon's going to be extremely important for this team just because he's another dynamic player that can playmake a little bit. And he's not even a great playmaker, but he can do it just enough. He can attack on the catch and hit one of these guys for the corner three shots and things like that. So that's really kind of his role because they don't have a lot of guys outside of Harden and Westbrook who can do that. And I think that's where those things kind of play in for this team. And the other thing, too, that's really important for them is, yo, PJ Tucker, Robert Covington, Ben McLemore, Daniel House, Austin Rivers, all those guys have to hit shots. If this team's really going to succeed and really, really kind of hit that, you know, boom and not bust, they got to hit threes. They got to be able to bomb from long range. And kind of the hidden secret, Rick, about the Rockets, everybody assumes they're a really good three-point shooting team. I said, no, they're just a high-volume three-point shooting team.
Yeah, because in terms of percentages, they're not as high as you would think. Yeah, it's just straight playing that numbers game that obviously we hear about so much. So you're saying they can't go 0-27 and do damage, except to themselves.
It would be interesting. If they did that again, that's just impressive. Like, what would be the odds of doing that twice in 4 or 5 years? Like, what? Yeah. Impressive.
So if you were, what do you think their ideal situation is? Like, in terms of seeding, who would you want them to be playing in the first round? And would they be, you know, in the 3-6 or the 4-5?
I think I would probably, if I were them, and I'm looking more beyond just the first round, but I'd probably want to be the 4-5 because I want to play the Lakers in the second round and not the Clippers. If you're Houston, I think you have a better chance against a team that plays big. And I don't necessarily mean they're going to beat the Lakers or anything like that. But the Clippers have the ability to go small, and they have the ability to probably put out a better small ball lineup than the Rockets. And I wouldn't want to go up against that if I was the Rockets. So for me in the second round, I'd want to play the Lakers. So that would put me at the 4-5. In terms of the first round, you know, I think they've had success against Utah. They've had success against Denver. I think those are the two teams that they'd probably be okay with playing in the first round and would do just fine.
So Utah right now is 2.5 games in front of the 7 seed. But obviously with Bogdanovich being out and the issues that, I mean, it seems like everything's fine, at least for on the court now between Mitchell and Gobert. But I mean, everybody sure seems like Dallas is, it's almost assumed at this point, Dallas is going to get out of the 7 seed. And it's just a matter of who falls down. Is it too easy to just say that's Utah, or could that maybe be someone like Oklahoma City too?
See, I think the thing about Utah that's concerning is just the fact that the Bogdanovich injury is such a big deal for them. And the fact that Mike Conley just hasn't killed it the way we thought he would from the start of the season. Now, he's been a lot better as of late. You know, February and March, he's starting to average, I think, around like 16 points a game and things like that and whatnot. So they're going to need him to really kind of step up. Like, they need that second scorer. And that's what Bogdanovich provided for them. And I think that's what they will desperately need when they get into these games. So that's why I think it's easier to pick them to have the free fall just in that sense, just when you look at it. But I'd also say, to me, it's not a gimme that Dallas gets out of the seventh seed just because still a young group of guys. Mm-hmm. You know, Luka Doncic is in his second year. Kristaps Porzingis is finally playing games that matter late in a season. Like, that hasn't happened for him at all, you know, and so there's a whole other element to this thing for the Mavs. So I don't look at them as a lock to move up out of seven. I just think 3 through 7 is just going to be a free for all. And then there's also just, it's just impossible predicting how 4 months layoff is going right. to, you know, account for all this. When everybody's like, make a prediction, I'm like, you know, I just go with the top teams because those are the teams I trust. But ultimately 3 through 7, like, this whole thing is going to be a free for all. We don't know who's going to do what, you know, who's going to come out of the gate shooting red hot, who's not. Whatever they were doing in March doesn't matter now in July.
Yeah, because sometimes I like to look at the gambling angles too, just because, you know, it brings a different angle to it sometimes. And just trying to see, okay, what are the totals? I looked at preseason totals, like first 2 weeks of the season totals, figuring that's probably about as close to a comp as you're going to get, I guess. And then full season totals, and looking at it for the last 5 years, it's like, okay, it's down a little bit, but it's not enough to really like say anything decisive. So really, as it's just going to be so fascinating to see A, how each team handles it, and also just like the conversation of what's going to be ahead first, offense or defense. I honestly don't know, because judging by like the stuff that I looked at in terms of just purely game totals, the scores are lower, but it's also teams tend to start the season playing a little bit slower and then they pick up. And then when you get to the dog days, it slows back down and everything. So I don't know. Do you have a leaning on if you think offense or defense is going to be ahead once we start up?
I think defenses will probably be ahead, just in the sense of it takes a beat for offense to catch its rhythm. And I think when you're playing, these guys are playing in arenas that they haven't played in or in an environment since AAU basketball. I mean, no fans in the crowd, different stadium lighting and things like that. Like, this is going to be an adjustment for these guys in terms of shooting altogether and figuring that out.
Yeah. I always think of like the NCAA tournament when they start going for like the Final Four, sometimes in the, second weekend, going to like the football stadiums, and the depth perception is just completely different. And then sometimes you get that Butler Duke game or Butler UConn, and
right.
It's just some of the worst basketball on a high level you've ever seen. So with that in mind, it makes me think of Dallas, because the big hit on them is their defense, but they've also had what, the best offense of all time or whatever by the numbers. So I think about it, and I'm like, if they're going to have more, in theory, they're not going to be exactly where they were when the season stops, more misses. They gave up the second highest percentage of transition basket or of transition opportunities off of live rebounds. And they were only average in the league at being able to defend those. So I wonder how much, when we get back into this, the just logically going to be missing more shots and not being as efficient as they were before the season is going to just expose that defense even more.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's tough to kind of, again, Rick, to like predict what it's going to look like at this point.
Yeah.
You know, because of the rhythm and stuff, and they basically had a mini training camp and could have easily started to focus on those things. But that's a big concern for Dallas in general. Just, you got to be better transition defense-wise. You know, if in this league, you got to be able to defend, and that makes a huge, huge difference for them. You know, they've been able to get away with it just for the pure fact that their offense has been so damn efficient, but they just got to be on top of it. And I think the bigger issue, too, is live ball turnovers, which could be a problem with Luka from time to time. You know, he jumps up to make a pass and has nowhere to go with it, and they're screwed. And I think that's something that the Mavs are going to have to deal with in that sense. But for, again, the first 8 games, like, for them, it's kind of figure out seeding and whatnot, you know, it's going to come down to playoffs, and in the playoffs things tend to slow down a little bit, so that might play into their advantage a little bit. But we got to see how it shakes out, man. I wish I had a better answer for you, Rick.
Oh no, I know. Believe me, I'm with you. I'm trying to grasp at anything, because obviously we're not ignoring everything else that's around this, but it's just kind of nice to talk about basketball here and there.
Yeah, you know,
just be able to have the fun and focus on the game and just realize we're not ignoring everything else that's going on. One other thing with Dallas and with Luka, I was, you know, just from following you on Twitter at @MoDeKeel_NBA for those keeping score at home. I thought it was interesting with all the, whenever you say, you know, ball dominant teams, everybody just thinks of Houston and James Harden just having the ball the entire time. But I thought it was interesting the thread you put together of how Rick Carlisle and Dallas utilize Luka off the ball, you know, before he gets the ball towards the end of the clock to make those decisions.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you, that's kind of what I love about what Rick Carlisle is doing. You know, it is a little bit heliocentric. There are times where the ball's just in Luka's hands, high pick and roll, isolation, and let him go. But they do run a ton of other things for him. You know, they put him in the post and try to get him to create out of the post. They get him off the ball, and this is kind of one of my favorite things about their offense is, you know, they get him off the ball, they get him in movement, they get him kind of coming off a couple of pin downs or Iverson cut, which is a looping cut over the top of, you know, from one sideline to the other sideline. And, you know, it gets movement, gets him the ball in different positions from there. And, you know, they're comfortable enough to, you know, he's comfortable enough to get off the ball early because he trusts that he's going to get it back late in the shot clock if the team doesn't have a shot yet at that point.
And how much of a difference can that make of, even if he is the one making the decisions, whether it's he is getting it at the top versus on the wing, and there's where, like, how much does location matter of where you're starting? Even if it's just more of a high pick and roll, how much can location make a difference of where that action begins?
I mean, it's huge, you know, in the sense of, like, where's the defense picking up? You know, when you're guarding a guy like Damian Lillard, you know, you got to almost pick him up at half court. He can come off a high ball screen and hit threes from the logo effortlessly, you know, and for Luka, that's the kind of stuff that matters. And defenses are going to, you know, are they going to try to pressure and pick him up higher, you know, once he crosses half court and make him have to come off this screen, you know, much higher? It's all about angles and different spots and things like that. Like, it's such a huge difference, Rick, in how it kind of plays to things, you know, and sometimes it plays to the offense's advantage to, you know, defenses to pick up higher. Sometimes it's a disadvantage, you know, and it's different per guys. You know, for Dallas, I think, you know, they're okay with them setting a screen higher if they have to, because Luka going downhill is a problem too. It's not like he's going to beat you with crazy speed or athleticism, but he's crafty enough to get by you. And the most important thing that Luka has that most guys don't is he has that ability to just kind of stop on a dime. It's that deceleration that really separates him from a lot of other players. And that just allows him to, you know, get you moving one way, then stop and pull up for a shot. And that's a big deal there.
Yeah, and especially I feel like it is the last couple years with Luka, and maybe it's just me paying more attention to it, because, like, I'll be perfectly honest, not a draft guy in the slightest, but I was iffy. I wasn't slam dunk number one on Luka or anything like that going into it, just because of everything that was thought at the time of athleticism in the EuroLeague and all that stuff. But just how he, and it's getting even more and more prevalent of guys being willing to give up space to put a defender in jail and be able to just manipulate the defense that way has become, it's just, he's so damn good at it. And then I know the other Twitter thread that I noticed from you was maybe not as prevalent for Dame to do it, but just how good Dame is in high pick and roll as well.
I mean, Dame's a beast at pick and rolls in general. I think, you know, he's on another level because he has all of that. He can put a guy in jail, you know, and go in from that. You know, he does something I don't think we see enough from guards, you know, off of double high pick and rolls or double drags, you know, where when he comes off the first screen and a lot of guards just continue to go on, like, okay, I'm supposed to come off both screens. Dame's reading the first defender, you know, when he comes off that screen, and if that defender is not, you know, showing properly or is just leaving a gap, he's just going to cut right down the lane and get a layup. Or other times, just come off that first screen before getting into the second one and pull up for three. You know, he's got defenses constantly guessing on what he's going to do, and they have to be prepared for all the actions. I think Dame's probably the best pick-and-roll point guard in the league right now at this point, with how he kind of just manipulates everything and finds, you know, just enough space for him to split pick and rolls. You know, again, like I said earlier, you know, he can come off from basically anywhere and pull up for three, and it's a dangerous shot. So I think, you know, all of that stuff plays a role into it. So I think that's kind of the difference there. I think Dame just has it all in his bag, and I think Luka will get there. You know, I think Luka's still got to shoot better. You know, we know his 3-point percentage isn't all that great right now, and stuff, but Luka has a lot of those things. And again, Luka's wider, so it's easier for him to put a guy in jail. And then his floater game has gotten so much better this season that, you know, it's allowed him to be able to put somebody in jail and then hit them with a floater right, you know, right underneath the free throw line. So, you know, it's a different level of pick and roll, but I think Dame at this point is like the echelon. Like, he's the guy everybody should be looking at.
And it's when you describe him just kind of reading it and seeing where the gap is, it makes me think of, I don't know how big of an NFL guy you are, but it makes me think of the Mike Shanahan or Kyle Shanahan offenses where the offensive line zone blocks and it's essentially the running back gets to pick which gap he wants. And then just there's the 1 foot plant and then downhill. And it's the same principle when Dame gets those multiple screens of just having those opportunities of, okay, could be the initial thought, or he could go all the way around the edge, or if something opens up in the middle, it works out perfect. It reminds me exactly of those types of running backs and how it and just the pure read and react of it.
That's a perfect analogy. I don't know enough about football to be able to have made that, but that's, I'm gonna steal that, Rick, down the road.
Oh, go for it. I was due for one of them, so
perfect.
I want to tell you about Dr. Squatch. If you're interested in premium soaps and just taking care of yourself better, smell better when you're in public, which I know, hey, we might have let go a little bit over all this quarantine time, go to drsquatch.com. Now, my partner on the I'm Fat podcast, Jay Zawoski, told me about Dr. Squatch. So what I did, I went to the website, I took the Squatch quiz. And the Squatch quiz is great for guys like myself that I don't know a whole lot about scents and different types of soaps. What it is a quick 2-minute quiz that just tells you what you would probably like from the Dr. Squatch line of products. Now, I'm currently using the Cool Fresh Aloe Bar, a soap, and it is the best smelling soap I've had. When I took it out of the packaging at home, my wife was sitting next to me. She legitimately goes, "Whoa, what smells so good?" And it was my Cool Fresh Aloe Bar of Dr. Squatch soap. And in reserve, I'm excited that I also have the Eucalyptus Greek Yogurt. It exfoliates a little bit because, hey, I can use all the help I can get to look better, smell better. So I'm here for it. If you spend $20 or more and use the promo code CAMP, C-A-M-P, at drsquatch.com, you'll save money and it helps this podcast out. And Dr. Squatch doesn't do just soaps. Now, if you do get the soaps, which I do recommend, get the Soap Saver. I made the mistake of not getting the Soap Saver right away. So this really great high quality bar of Cool Fresh Aloe is going away quicker than I'd like it to. So make sure you get the Soap Saver. They also have the hair products. I have a quarantined beard going, so I got some beard oil. They have cologne. There's a bunch of different products you can choose from that will help you out, that will improve your life at drsquatch.com. Take the Squatch quiz and remember, spend $20 or more and use the promo code CAMP. You'll save money and it helps this podcast out. drsquatch.com. Talked about pretty much the West exclusively, because let's be honest, the West is really, really interesting, deeper than the East is, because I don't know, when I start looking out East, it's like, okay, Milwaukee was just so dominant that it's hard to think of too much else. But as you look at the main contenders, as we see them possibly to Milwaukee, Philly, Boston, Toronto, Miami, I'm not counting Indiana at this point. I don't know, maybe I'm being short-sighted in that, Which one of those teams is the most interesting for you to watch as we get rolling?
It's got to be Philly. Yeah. Like, Philly's the weirdest team. They've been the weirdest team all year. They've been so dominant at home and so bad on the road. It's, you know, there's a good team there. They're trying to figure it out. And now that we get the reports right, they're going to change their starting lineup and put Ben Simmons as the power forward. Means there's going to be more pick and rolls where he's the screener. So that's kind of the fun part there. And I think that's the team that's going to be most interesting to watch in that sense. We know what Philly is. We know what Toronto is. We know Boston. We know Miami. We know Indy as well. You know, but Philly's the one team that's like, if they put it together, they're the X factor. They're a team that can go to the finals. Like, it sounds weird to say considering how weird the season was, but they got enough talent and just, you know, Embiid can be a game changer, you know, on both ends of the court. Simmons, you know, we talk all about what he can't do and never focus on stuff that he does. And he's one of the most versatile players in the NBA. Phenomenal defender, should make the all defense team. You know, on top of that is great court vision. Considering that he can't shoot and every team's lay off him, he still finds lanes to make passes and things like that and still gets to the cup. You know, he's got to finish better at the rim, and that's something that hopefully will improve over time for him. But, you know, those are two players right there. That's two teams with potential superstars down the road, you know, and that's something that when you look at them, if they can put it all together, they're a team that could really threaten any team in the East.
And they just have multiple bodies that have proven to, I don't know, kind of slow down Giannis. Is that all we can really claim at this point for anybody? You know, Joel Embiid a little bit. Al Horford was known as the Giannis limiter. We can't say stopper, I guess, at this point. But, you know, the guy who was able to do some work against him. So they have, and they can have the luxury of having those dudes on multiple units if, you know, God forbid in the playoffs, Bud allows Giannis to play 40 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You know, Bud's taking a lot of hit for that, and rightfully so. But one thing I think people also need to understand there about the minutes for Giannis, it's hard when your body's conditioned to play 30, 31, 32 minutes a game all year, you know, to just say, okay, for the next 3 weeks, you're playing 45. Like, that's a hard adjustment. Like, we're watching these guys ramp up now, right? And that's a hard adjustment. Now, in this situation, he probably can ramp him up and prepare him to play that many minutes. Just kind of going back to last year, though, when people were screaming at him and why isn't Giannis playing 45 minutes? He goes, yeah, maybe because Giannis can't go 45 minutes. You know, Sixers, when you go back to them, like Embiid can't go 45 minutes in a game, you know, five straight games or something like that. You know, he did it a game and then he'd have to sit out the next one. So I think that's interesting. I think with Philly, again, like you were saying, they have a lot of bodies that they could throw at Giannis. Nobody's going to stop him, but can you slow him down? And I think, you know, Embiid, you have Horford, you have Simmons if you really want to throw at him. I mean, I think they have enough there to make Milwaukee have to figure it out a bit.
So the thing that I want to move to Miami, because I they're probably getting the least amount of talk of those top four teams, but I've got another weird parallel. I don't know that it made me think of is Duncan Robinson was such a revelation this year. And, you know, obviously great on him and Miami's development program for getting him to where he is now. But I wonder if they were one of the teams maybe hurt the most in terms of a scouting perspective of just being able to see all the stuff that they do to get Duncan Robinson open looks. It almost reminds me of, okay, I'll throw another random sports analogy at you. Russ Tyler, Keenan Thompson in D2 in the first game where he uses the knuckle puck and it works perfectly. But then Wolf the Dentist Stanson and his coaches are there watching. And then the first time Team USA plays Iceland, Iceland is right there on him every time he's on the ice. So then it completely changes what they want to do offensively. Is this what's going to happen to Miami and Duncan Robinson?
No, not so much. I listen, that was you're one for two now. You were shooting 100% and now you're down to 50%, Rick.
That's fair.
The league knows about Duncan Robinson at this point, and it's hard. It's not like they're going to come in with something drastically different, you know, from what they've been doing. I think, you know, Miami's going to continue to roll. My thing about Miami, they're another one of those interesting teams in the sense of, you know, Bam Adebayo you know, it showed in that one game against Milwaukee, like, hey, he can guard Giannis to do as much as anybody else can, we should say. But my thing with Miami that kind of concerns me is, you know, Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn, Tyler Hero, three guys they really depend on, have never played in the playoffs. Bam only played, you know, one playoff series and was averaging like 15 minutes at that point. Like, there's an adjustment period. And even though there's not going to be fans, even though it's on the neutral site, you know, the intensity is going to ramp up. And that's, you know, you just don't know how young guys are going to respond to that. And I think that's the issue there when I look at Miami, because, you know, Jimmy Butler has not shot the ball well from three this year. You know, Goran Dragic is great. I love their mix of veterans and youth, but at the same time, their youth is still a bit inexperienced and not fully ready, I think, to make that leap and take this team to the next level.
And something that I do when I look at playoff teams, and maybe this is just having seen the Thibodeau era Bulls close up, is teams that have even, you know, more wins than you think, but they're also the teams that try harder in the regular season, I tend to maybe devalue them a smidge just because of realizing, hey, now everyone's going to give as much of a crap as you the entire time, even if it is, you know, it's not the middle of February, but it's the second round of the playoffs or something like that. So is that fair, or is that just maybe the Thibodeau era Bulls clouding my judgment?
I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, I think it's going to be, yeah, Rick, I got no feel for it one way or the other.
No, that's fair. Cause it's something that's so ambiguous. There we go. I was going to completely make up a word there and I stopped myself.
I'd have preferred it if you did. It would have been funnier if you did.
That's true. I don't even know what I was going to say. I don't know. I completely lost it right when I stopped myself, but it wasn't going to be great. So,
as everything else I've said in this pod.
No, you're good. So, and like the other thing with like when you're mentioning those young guys too for Miami, they're mostly one-way players. So if you're going to have that many like one-way players, it can be problematic. I know, you know, they do the best they can with what they got defensively, but especially, you see some of the teams are going up against just having so many guys that can at least play two ways, if not perfectly, but at least better than a guy like Duncan Robinson or maybe a guy like Tyler Hero, that it's, I guess there's, like with everybody else, it's just going to be so matchup dependent for them.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Teams are going to go after those guys, and I think that's where, you know, the one thing I do like about Miami is I think they have one of the best coaches in Eric Spoelstra, and he's going to be able to kind of start putting together schemes. I mean, they'll play zone. They'll throw different things at you and things like that. And, you know, teams will go at Duncan Robinson, and it takes time for him to kind of develop. Like, he's got to kind of watch how J.J. Redick defends. Like, that's a guy, you know, who is not going to be physically skilled defensively or anything like that, but he just finds a way to screw things up for other teams and be in the right spot. So I think that's the kind of stuff that they're going to have to look at, but that's more of a development thing, right? Like, that's down the road. Right now in these games, you know, this is the stuff that Duncan Robinson is going to find out. Like, oh, wow, they're, you know, in a playoff series, it's much easier to target a guy than it is, you know, in the regular season. And I think he's going to find that out pretty quickly.
And that makes me think of Boston, because not only with Kemba Walker do you have to worry about the injury, you know, the left knee that's been bothering him and how effective he's going to be offensively, because if he's limited offensively, I mean, in the Eastern Conference, is he maybe, considering amount of time he'll be on the floor, the most targeted guy in the Eastern Conference by offenses?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be targeted, but that's why they have, you know, the guys behind him. That's where, you know, Marcus Smart comes into play. That's where Jaylen Brown comes into play. That's where Jason Tatum's improvement defensively this year has been huge for the Celtics. You know, I think those are the guys. And in terms of, I think he probably will be the most targeted guard. I think a couple of other big guys are going to be the teams that are going to be more targeted. I think, you know, kind of going back to the West, I think teams are going to target Nikola Jokic in the pick and rolls. And I think he's going to have to answer some of those questions for teams when the playoffs come around. And I think that's the issue there for the Celtics, is how do they make up for that stuff? And if he's limited, they're just not going to go that far. You know, I'm sorry, Boston fans, but if he's not healthy, you know, and he's playing a limited role, it's going to be a problem for the Celtics, because there's only so much Jason Tatum can do, only so much Smart can do, so much Jaylen Brown can do, you know, so it's an issue for them. And especially with the possibility that Gordon Hayward might, you know, leave the bubble to go to attend his daughter's birth, which he should. No judgment at all on that. Yeah. But that's just a reality in that scenario. Like, this is something that the Celtics have to really be concerned about. And that's kind of why I think it's interesting to see how they kind of play these eight games and these scrimmages. You know, how much time do they give Kemba to ramp up and get his body right? And then how much are they going to be looking at resting him to kind of protect him?
It's okay. Boston's a very level-headed fan base that I'm sure will take your criticism completely rationally. That's just what Boston does. Ask Waz.
Always.
And to go back to Jokic for a second, as a man that also hosts the I'm Fat podcast, I was very concerned with the developments around Jokic, whether he is actually as skinny as he seems, or maybe he's just getting better clothing that covers up the fat. I'm very concerned about where Nikola Jokic is, because if we don't have Jokic, I mean, there's not really the fat point guards much anymore. We don't have a Ray Felton to hang our hat on, or Khalid El-Amin in the early 2000s.
This isn't a fat point guard league anymore. I was literally just talking about that with a friend of mine last night. It's no longer a fat point guard league.
It's really troubling. I'm trying to even think, because like, I was a project for that podcast is my buddy that I do it with is more of a hockey guy. Is we were going to do, okay, what's your starting fat lineup in each league? And looking at point guards now, it's not easy anymore. There was always at least one.
I think the one guy, and I don't even know if he's fat, and this is definitely a fan base that hates me, is the Toronto Raptors' Kyle Lowry.
Oh, that's true.
You know, I think he's got a little bit of a junk in the trunk there that can kind of be your fat point guard. But I even am hesitant to call him fat, but it's just he's a little thick.
That's true. When he puts guys in jail, there's a little like residual bounce back too. It just works out really well for him. Actually, with Toronto, with thinking about Kemba Walker too, it makes me think of like that 2-3 matchup, if that's what it ends up being in the second round, of, okay, if it's Marcus Smart on Kyle Lowry, if that's going to be the default of what Boston goes with, can Van Vliet do enough as that secondary ball handler in that, well, I guess it's tertiary, if you want to count Siakam, however you want to do it. Just if he's the one that has Kemba on him, can he do enough work if the switches aren't happening, or if they just say, "Yeah, screw it, we'll just give it to Fred and let him do his thing"?
I think, you know, Fred VanVleet's a guy that they can do that. They can turn the offense over to him and have him go and let him kind of create and get everything going for everybody. I think the thing about the Raptors that's interesting to me is there's no one guy on that team. I mean, Pascal Siakam's the high scorer, but, you know, he gets a lot in transition. And that's the concern for me with the team, is they are a very transition-heavy team. Their half-court offense is not that great. I think they're like 16th in points per possession, according to Synergy. I think that's a concern. That's the problem there for them, you know. And really, when we get into late into the shot clock, who's going to be the guy you're going to turn to going, like, go create for yourself? Because, listen, as great as Pascal Siakam has been, I don't think he's there yet, you know, and I don't think he's the guy who in the playoffs I'm going to feel comfortable in a 7-game series going, all right, late in the shot clock, go get us a shot. Like, that's what Kawhi Leonard did for this team last year that put them over the top. And I think now they're in this situation where they're a great team all around, but they just don't have that guy, that one guy who at the end of the clock, I feel comfortable going 7 seconds left on the shot clock, get the ball to Kyle, get the ball to Fred, get the ball to Pascal. You know, they'll get us a bucket. I don't trust that. I don't feel comfortable thinking that that's going to be what takes me to the finals again.
And because I was trying to think of other teams that have just basically said, okay, last 3 minutes of the game, we're just going to run our offense and it works. It's the Warriors, but that's partially just because they were so damn talented and it was Steph Curry that could still take the shot at the end of the clock, and the beautiful game Spurs that were able to kind of exist that way. But, and this is going to sound ridiculous, and I realize this, but it's maybe the one year where it's mildly applicable. The Pascal Siakam at the end of the clock was exposed as much as anything in the fourth quarter of the All-Star game. Because if you remember, Team Giannis was pretty much getting the ball to Kyle Lowry or Pascal Siakam at the end of the clock. Siakam would try and drive to the lane on James Harden. Sometimes he would try and go that step past the basket when he's in the paint and do the scoop, use his length around Harden. Sometimes that would work, but rarely. Or he would try the reverse pivot when he gets stopped and he would get stymied by someone else helping down. And I know it happened in regular season games as well, but that was just one that, of course, there's elite defenders on the floor that were actually trying in that moment. But it was just a moment of being like, this is what I see in the playoffs that worries me for that team.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that's just the concern. And it's, you know, he's not that far in his development yet to have had that. And that's kind of the deal there for Toronto. So when everybody's talking about Toronto, I'm always kind of just like, yeah, I don't necessarily buy them in that sense. You know, like, he's not getting by Giannis with that length, you know, like, you know, Giannis is going to outlength him, you know, and it's just kind of the scenario and how that stuff plays out. You know, he's had a great year and he's been awesome and he's going to continue to get better, but it's just, yeah, that's the next iteration of his game and development. Unfortunately, I just don't see that not going to happen in the playoffs this year.
How likely do you think it is any of these teams, barring an unexpected positive COVID test or injury, is going in the East? Has, like, what percent chance does anybody else outside of the Bucks have of getting out of the East?
Gosh, I mean, this is just a guess. Like, I'm just throwing it out there and saying, like, maybe it's 25%, which is probably even high. Mm-hmm. If you ask me in a week or so, but the way I just kind of look at things, it's, you know, it doesn't seem like any team in the East is scared of the Bucks, right? Like, they don't have that kind of invincible aura where teams are worried and like, man, we can't beat them. I mean, everybody kind of feels like they can have a shot at them. So I think it's, you know, and I think that goes a long way. I think for Toronto, as much as I just kind of crapped on their chances, you know, you also got to look at the fact that they have playoff swagger. Like, they do carry themselves with that swagger after having won a championship, and rightfully so, you know, and they feel comfortable and confident. So I think they're fine in that sense, you know, and I don't think anybody's lacking for confidence. So, but at the end of the day, man, this is one of the top defenses, one of the top, you know, I think the Bucks are in the top 10 in offense, but they're going to have the two-time MVP in Giannis. You know, Chris Middleton's, you know, as much as people just kind of talk about him, you know, I don't think people understand, like, just how good he is this year. You know, he's a damn near a 50-40-90 guy this season. I mean, like, you know, it's one of those things, like, that's just going to be a tough team to beat. It's going to come down to guys like, you know, can Eric Bledsoe not crap the bed again? You know, can George Hill continue to shoot 1,000% from three?
Yeah.
Can Brook Lopez find his 3-point shot? You know, like, that's really what it's going to come down to for the Bucks. And I think, because ultimately Giannis is going to do what Giannis does, and I think Chris Middleton is going to do what he does.
Yeah, I think it was Woz that said it, and I love that he said it, that Middleton had the year that everybody thinks Jason Tatum had.
Yeah,
I think that's a great way of putting it, because he was just so good, but obviously Giannis looms.
Yeah, it's just hard. You're playing in the shadow of the MVP, right? Like, you know, and he also benefits from that as well, you know, because so much attention goes to Giannis. It's not as much concentrated on Middleton. And I think, you know, I think smart teams in the playoffs, though, are going to put a lot more attention on Middleton, because I would just kind of look at it going like, look, stopping Giannis is impossible. We got to try to stop the other guys. And I would first target Middleton, because, if you know, they probably can't win games if he's only shooting or only scoring like 13, 14 points a night.
And the Brook Lopez, like you mentioned, just the fact that their offense has been as good as it's been this year, and Brook Lopez hasn't shot for shit, like, especially compared to what he did last year. I mean, it's the fact that he hasn't played, or at least offensively, he has not been as good of a shooter as he was before. The balance for them of how often does Budenholzer want to go small with Giannis at center is really fascinating, because that's where I, like, Marvin, if people forgot, which is understandable because it's been 4 months, but Marvin Williams is a Buck. That's a thing. Yeah. So he allows them to go small, but I'm interested to see how much Bud is willing to do that, because he clearly loves just having a big out there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's an advantage to Brook beyond shooting. You know, I think he's one of those guys of like, okay, you're going to go small. We're going to put Brook in the post. And he's been really good in the post for the Bucks. He's been dominating that matchup. You want to switch and put a small on Brook? He's going straight to the block, and he's going to go old school net style, Brooklyn net style, and he's going to score there. And he's been a beast for them. That's been something that's been a nice little wrinkle that Bud has added to this team and that Brook gives them now. And of course, you wish that was paired with him shooting at least like 36% from three or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, that's kind of the game there. And when it comes to Marvin Williams, like, I just don't know how much they're going to really play him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Like, it's a great point on how much they use Brook in the post, because it's kind of funny that a lot of people have kind of forgotten. Yeah, Brook Lopez in the post, people thought he was almost out of the league because they thought he was a relic. He was one of these offense-only bigs. Yep. And then gets into Bud's system and, okay, like, he's a dude again, which is fascinating just in terms of that. But yeah, how much Budenholzer is willing to, I don't even know if it's change, but just be willing to make those tweaks, I is the last Bucks thing that I find kind of fascinating.
Yeah, that's the big question. You know, will Bud make the adjustments, or will he kind of stick with what he feels comfortable with? And that's something that's followed him since Atlanta. So, you know, that's just something we're going to have to keep an eye out for.
So out west, you know, I mentioned it in the east. Out west, is anybody truly
nope.
have it outside of LA? No.
No.
Okay, good.
This is a question I get asked, Rick, on every radio, yeah. I think. And I'm just like, guys, it's
no.
A barring something weird, it's right. Clippers, Lakers. It's just, I don't see a team good enough that can beat either of these teams in a 7-game series. Just at the end of the day, I just think we're heading to a conference finals with the two of them. Unless something weird happens, I don't see it being any different.
And we will all be very mad if it doesn't happen, because we've been waiting for it all this time too. And it's just such a fascinating matchup too, because it's funny, for as much as when we were talking Celtics, it's the back line that helps out with the, you know, with when guys get ISO'd or rim protection or everything with that. With the Clippers, it's opposite, because it's like, yeah, Zubats is, I think it's a solid at the rim. He's not spectacular or anything like that, but it's just that their perimeter defense can be so damn smothering that it probably makes his life a lot easier when people do get to the basket.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's so damn hard to get into the paint against these guys, you know, and when you do, then, you know, you've worked so hard to get there, and you can't really let up. It's not like Zoo's dominant, but it's just the fact that, you know, he's there. And he's tall and he's long, and it's that simple, you know? And it's like, okay, now here's the other obstacle, but I've expended all my energy just trying to get into the paint. So I think that's kind of the benefit he gets with playing with those guys. And I think, you know, on top of it, he knows also when he rotates over that, look, the guys that are probably rotating down to cover for him is, you know, it's any combination of Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Patrick Beverley. I mean, it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, their defense is ridiculous. It would be kind of fun in that series for Zubats to be some sort of, you know, prominent player, even though he probably wouldn't be, just because of the Lakers being willing to give him away for, I forget what it was, but it was basically nothing. It was like a future second round pick or something like that, which still doesn't make sense to this day, but I don't know, whatever. So Mo, before I let you get out of here, and I appreciate the time, you know, for you, obviously spending the better part of a decade in either the video room for the Clippers or the Spurs, looking at all the logistics behind the bubble, what are you most fascinated in terms of just anything, how the teams have to do whatever it is, whether it's getting the videos out, whether it's who they have in their party, all that kind of stuff? Like, what's the part of it that fascinates you the most?
All of it. I mean, I'm sorry. It's just, it's all fascinating. You know, I'm curious. I mean, something as dumb as like, I was asking a friend of mine the other day who works with the team now. He's not in the bubble, but his team is. And I go like, yo, man, have you heard anything about the internet speed? You know, like these guys are transferring video files and things like that. Even if your video coordinator's in the bubble, you probably still have your staff working from the practice facility or from home. And, you know, they have to send video files over to you and things like that. Are you, you know, I'm just curious, how long is the download of these files and things like this? Because that was a normal problem for me on the road. And that's still an issue. You know, I mean, not a lot of hotels have great Wi-Fi, to be honest. So that's kind of the small stuff. I'm interested in that. I'm interested in how coaching staffs are operating. You know, you have a limited staff now. Who's pitching in where? You know, do you have coaches helping equipment guys? Like, I'm just curious about those kinds of things.
It's all so fast. I hope once this season's over, we probably won't get like a definitive one until like 5 years down the line when pretty much everybody's out of Dodge. But like the oral histories of how these teams did whatever they needed to do in the bubble is just going to be fascinating. I can't wait for it.
I mean, this is one of the few times I'll say thank God for camera phones, because all these guys are giving us content, you know. And you know, each team I think has a member of their digital or social media team there, and they're all kind of documenting it. Like, you know, somebody's going to put together a bubble documentary at some point.
That's got to be the best job in the bubble, is just, you know, you're not really helping wins or losses. You're just documenting everything and just having fun with it and admiring and documenting ridiculousness. That's got to be a great gig.
Yeah, but I got to imagine they're pitching in somewhere too. I imagine they're having to do some more stuff. You know, they might have to do tech support for some of these coaches. Like, that was the other thing, Rick. Like, I'd be on the road and half the time I was tech support for coaches. How do I get this to work? It was all those kinds of things. So, there's a fun element to all of this.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Myers. You might have to stop gaming for a second so you can download the game plan.
That's what I was saying. Like, all these dudes are playing video games online. Like, there's just got to be a whole, I can only imagine it's so slow at this point.
Oh my God. But yeah, it's like between that and the porn, I mean, I don't know what's slowing it down more.
Both.
Yeah.
Equally.
Well, Mo, I really appreciate the time, man. It's a pleasure to get to talk to you. Everybody follow Mo on Twitter at @MoDeKeel_MBA. Read his work on Bleacher Report. Listen to him on Nerdist, She Wrote. It's the Friday edition of the Athletic NBA show that switched over last week, so make sure you've got everything copacetic that way. Brody and the Beard for all your Rockets updates. Mo, you're doing a lot of stuff, and I congratulate you for it, and you do it really well, and it's a pleasure to get to talk to you.
Oh, well, thank you for having me, Rick.
Subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Follow me on Twitter at Rick C. Camp. All questions, there's a lot of stuff in there. Anything you want to react to, basketballcamppod@gmail.com. Next week, remember, I'm going to have a State of the Chicago Bulls pod before the bubble gets going, because once the bubble starts, I'm going to be doing daily recap pods. So make sure you're subscribed if you're not already. Rate and review if you don't mind. That helps me out greatly in terms of ratings. Until next time, I'm Rick Camp, and this is Basketball Camp.